It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedom's Phoenix at the farm. And, you know, I got to tell you, breaking news. Silver has plummeted today. It plummeted down to $40.11. I'm like, you know, it's gone down to $40. Yeah. Well, you know, it was at the opening of Hong Kong. It was up to $42. $42. Let me say that again. You ready? $42. We were just screaming to buy silver. It's still a buy. It's so manipulated. And the dollar is so certain to crash. And China is so certain to divesting itself of long-term treasury bills. And it's so quantitative easing is going to keep going on. And they're so going to keep buying our debt. And they're so certain silver and gold and whatever else and commodity and, you know, wheat and rubber and tennis shoes and broccoli and whatever is going to skyrocket. Revolution. And Dr. Paul is saying, hey, you know, you can talk an intellectual revolution. You can have whatever revolution you can get based on a lot of things. But I tell you where it motivates a lot of people, they'd be hungry. And you don't stop that. Now, there's, man, you need to be up in your food stamp program, which they have. They just plow. You know, we know better than let people go hungry. That's nope. Would not be prudent at this juncture. So let's see, there's some other things I wanted to talk about. Let's go over some of the headlines on Freedom's Phoenix right now. This is, wow. Prosecutors defend probe of WikiLeaks related Twitter accounts. Now, what happened is there's a lot of people that are challenging the federal government's ability to just go in and start looking at what they've been tweeting and so on. So a few people have been challenging it, going, well, they're making the argument, hey, we can do it because fill in the blank and they'll get away with it and assume that they're going to do it whether they get permission or not. And heck, they probably got their, you know, what did Jesse Ventura say? You know, CIA guys at high deputy levels in state government, and he knows when they changed them and who they were and got introduced. You think they don't do the same thing for telecommunications or any communications, email communication, internet communications? I remember, what was it, WorldCom or something? There was a company that made their whole thing back in the beginning of the internet blowing up and getting big and so on, and probably about 2002, 4, around in there. And I remember it went bankrupt, and of course it got bought up by, and you got government involvement in this and that and backed and, you know, whatever. But the thing that they had done, it was a trans-Pacific optic, fiber optic communication line that was going to provide for a lot of bandwidth. Well, the whole big deal behind this whole thing is they found out that there was the NSA box on it. Every single bit of communication that was going across that thing was being gleaned. You know, I mean, they're taking out whatever goodie they want. So to think that they don't, and if they got away, you know, hey, it was going to a foreign country, and we put the box outside the 3-mile limit, so it's okay. You know, I mean, to think, oh, it went to space, it went through a communication center, whatever excuse, they're going to do it. Don't be under any illusion that you're going to be secure from these guys. You know, they got the Uber. What was the movie Sneakers with Robert Redford. It was all about the super decrypting box. Is it no matter what encryption you had, it was able to decrypt it? You know, let me put it this way. Do you think that the NSA and the U.S. Military Industrial Complex would not be attempting to create such a box? No, they wouldn't do that. That'd be wrong, right? You know, so that's why I always ask, you know, somebody said, do you think that? I go, look, I just need to know, can they? Do they have the physical ability? Well, then they are. Was there some moral hurdle they got to get over? You know, this is, no. I know better. That's exactly what they're doing because they can. So let's go ahead and some of the other headlines here. Tensions high as Egypt protesters accuse army of turning on them. More than 1,000 pro-democracy protesters continued to occupy Cairo's Tahrir Square Sunday, one day after the army, until now seen the guardian of the revolution, okay, they used to be good guys, appeared to have fired live rounds in the crowds, killing at least one protester. Okay, now what do you think is going to happen there? While France is banning burqas. Well, I'll cure it. Oh, man, it's amazing. And Jesse Ventura, you know, he's making the rounds now, doing his 63 conspiracies or letters or documents they don't want you to read. Well, he chose 63 because 1963 is when JFK was assassinated. It's a big thing with him. So this is, they're trying to make fun of him, and it doesn't matter. People are, okay, well, he's crazy. Any one of those 63, something I might want to know about, I'll go buy the book. So we'll see. One thing that, if it was more current, I bet you would be in there and may already be, IMF, International Monetary Fund. Here's what they're doing. The IMF plots role as world's central bank. Well, this isn't like news to a lot of us, but the world's economy is a disaster. The IMF is the logical choice to lead the way to a brighter banking future in a consolidated, centralized world economy. It says so itself. From Daily Bell. Now, what we had on Free Speech last week, we didn't get to talk about it. I was doing live but on the show. But they are having a meeting this weekend sponsored by, how is it? It's a Bloomberg, I think, had a thing in two different places that you had the IMF and the World Bank, and these guys are having meetings in the United States, and you don't hear anything about it. This is already being done, man. It's like they're doing this crash on purpose so they can justify what they always wanted. How many times have I said Amero? Are you kidding me? They're going for the world, though. That's just distraction. The goal has always been to have a centralized world flow of. So where does silver and gold play in that? It doesn't, according to them. I guarantee you, especially when they manipulated silver so much and now all comes out. You watch what happens. It'll be the same thing they did back in 33. You know, they're going to be going, you can't have gold and silver anymore. Gimme. Then how long would that ban last, if at all? So what do? You turn it in. You know, you might be needing to. You need to eat if you don't got food. We were up in Sholo where retired Senator Karen Johnson's up there. And imagine, here's a Mormon woman with her husband. 25 years they've been married. 26, 27, 28, 29. You know, it was just under, I think, 29 years. I remember Don and I went to her 25th wedding anniversary back in, I don't know, 06 or something. And she retires as a legislator, when she gets, you know, some kind of stipend of some kind, you know, she gets some kind of money from them, and her husband retired from government, so they're living on some government money, and their retirement, and they have 35 grandkids. You know, they got lots of rooms in there and big houses and out barns and beds and multiple kitchens and kind of, and enough food to last them a while. Now, of course, what do? And we talked about these things, and they're kind of like, you know, I'm just, you know, if somebody comes here to take and steal from us and so on, I mean, they will meet resistance. But if somebody's just hungry, you know, we'll share. They're planning on it. This is what's coming. They got big, giant, I mean, these had to be, I don't know, 300-pound pigs. They're enormous. I mean, probably more than that. I mean, these are huge. Bunch of chickens. They're getting ready for what they believe is coming. And here's someone that was a state legislator, a senator here for a decade. She was the campaign manager for Pat Buchanan. during the 96 election.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, with Sierra working all the goodies. Oh, we got a lot of stuff going on. Oh, this week, I got to make sure I mention this. We have Atlas Shrugged is coming this weekend. This Friday is premiering, and it's going to be here in Tempe, Arizona at the Harkins Theater, Valley Art Theater, which is by Arizona State University. So what we're doing is the movie studio sent me some original posters, you know, big posters. They're probably, I don't know, 2 feet by 3 feet or something, these big posters. As who is John Galt, and then, of course, Atlas Shrugged, you know, the movie part one posters. Well, we're going to be giving those out as prizes for the best. You know, you can go put up a Who is John Galt sign somewhere. You make it to where everybody can see it. I give you original movie poster. So we'll be posting that tonight, early tomorrow morning, and encouraging a lot of the activists to go out and do that here. And you send me a JPEG, you send me a photograph we put up on Freedom's Phoenix where you did a nice Who is John Galt thing without damaging property, thank you. Now, you put that up there, you know, you get it, an original poster, which will be worth some money someday. Or certainly has sentimental value, I am sure. And I got several. I probably have a dozen, six of each kind. So go ahead and you'll start thinking about where you're going to put Who is John Galt here in the Valley. And I'm all over it, man. You get a poster. So we'll have something on Freedom's Phoenix about that. I want to go over some of the other news here. But I just wanted to finish up with the show, though, that you have up in northeastern Arizona, a lot of people are getting out of the city. And the people that do this are generally people that can. You know, they have retirements. They got a little bit of cash saved up, some money. They go buy a home up there. They get away from the government. But they want a little bit of government. They come in and say, you know, we need to pave this road. We need, you know, and then it starts all over again. I mean, that's what you're witnessing up there. We went up to see and talk to people and take a look at and so on. If you're in any kind of a community, what's going to happen is there are going to be a group of people. They'll go there for the same reasons, to get away from whatever. Like, you know, we got an invasion in Arizona and the Prescott and Flagstaff and a lot of places from California. But they bring their mentality with them. They try and bring their culture. They go, yeah, but you need to have and you don't got, and we need just a little bit of a tax. And then, of course, you know, the scum of the people that were doing it before as politicians make their way over and start all over again. Here we go. So I'm like, all right. That may not be the answer. I mean, if you're really going to be, you want to be left alone, you need to go off on Lone Prairie by your lonesome. Well, that's kind of what, you know, this trip confirmed for us. We kind of had that idea anyway. It's you need to get off. Well, fortunately, technology is getting to the point to where, man, you know, we get a little bit of energy thing going on. We're autonomous from a grid. Toodaloo. Toodles me boodles, man. I am off on the Lone Prairie, and I just have, you know who my neighbors are? Who the heck I want them to be? So this is kind of where we're thinking, you know, as we're preparing for the year. And Karen really wanted me to go up there and see what was up there. And it's very beautiful, especially after it snowed, you know. So it was really nice. I really like to visit. We always like going up there in the summer anyway because it's nice. But I can see where this is going. There isn't going to be a small community that doesn't have the man with his thumb on you. In fact, in smaller communities, oftentimes it's worse. And that was confirmed. FYI. Now, I want to talk about, you know, Iceland. Now, Iceland, little Iceland panics the big banks. And let me tell you why. This is what's going on. Now, this is from Daily Bell, dailybell.ch. Now, Daily Bell is a libertarian-oriented English site that's in Europe. And you'll see some of the stuff that we have in there. You know, Ron Paul will post on there sometimes, and different people and people we know. But it's really more for the expatriates that have gone to Europe and kind of what's going on here. Maybe a little bit of protection. Iceland says no. Now, this is them quoting the Wall Street Journal. Iceland says no. The island nation may serve as an example for those who want capitalists to operate at their own risk. In a national referendum Saturday, Icelanders for the second time voted against a government proposal to pay the big losses of some of their bankers and their foreign customers, with 60% voting no and 40% in favor. I'm amazed you even have 40%. I don't even know who they were. For those of us who welcome capitalists but want them to operate their own risk, this hopefully sets an example for the rest of Europe. Right. Now, I'm going to read a little bit of the history on how this happened, okay? How Icelandic taxpayers got stuck with this bailout bill is a strange saga. When the international financial crisis hit bottom in the fall of 2008, it became clear that the Icelandic Insurance Fund for Depositors could not cover all of the liabilities of the foreign branches of the private Icelandic bank Landsbanki. In order to avoid a general run on their own banks, the British and the Dutch governments decided to reimburse depositors for not only the principal but also the interest due in Landsbanki branches in their countries up to a certain level. These two governments then presented the bill to the Icelandic government, $3.5 billion, for the tiny Nordic nation of 320,000. This was an enormous sum, amounting to half of its annual GDP. It would be the equivalent of £700 billion claim on the British government. The Icelandic government protested that it was not responsible for deposits in private banks. It had fully complied with European law in setting up the Icelandic Insurance Fund for Depositors, financed by a levy on the banks. If the fund could not meet its obligations, it was a problem for those who, at their own risk and for a quick profit, had entrusted their money to Landsbanki. But other threats from the British and Dutch governments, supported by the European Union and the International Monetary Fund, at the end of 2009, Iceland reluctantly signed a treaty according to which it had to pay the total sum, with stiff interest rates, to the United Kingdom and the Netherlands. The import of the above unfairness is powerful for those who believe, as we do, that the 21st century is marked by a clash between the truth-telling of the internet and the dominant social themes, the fear-based promotions of the Anglo-American elite that seeks a one-world order. The power elite, which has been attempting to create global government for nearly a century now, or perhaps longer, needs to project a certain inevitability. Iceland's two rejections of attempts to force its citizens to pay for the financial mistakes of others must be causing nausea in the city of London and upending the sense of inevitability that is so important to the wretched bullying that has become the trademark signature of the European Union. You know, it's becoming an issue of utmost international import when Iceland's own central bankers start to squeal. Here's what People's Daily, China, reported just yesterday in an article entitled "Icelandic Central Bank Official Wants Into Icesave Issue." And surely they do. An Icelandic central bank official said Saturday Iceland should get over the Icesave issue as soon as possible to create favorable conditions for a return to growth. Now, what this means is, you know, the people, they said, you know, they did away with their government. You know, they signed some deal. What? Yeah, you're done. We're starting over. Remember? Now they're trying to get them indebted again. Twice they voted down. Can they allow this to stand? It's just an example. 320,000 people. But they're setting a trend for the rest of the planet. Oh. Can't have that.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, more news and perspective here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, I want to go ahead and finish up on this Icelandic thing because, you know, I haven't tracked it that much because I know where this is going. You know, it always has forever and always, amen, and this is what's going to happen. The people there are going to keep saying no. The first vote, it was like 90%. 90% no. Now, I don't know why it went to 60, what kind of deal they were trying to, or even people said, no, I don't know, vote, how many times I got to do this? Now, you've seen this before in any kind of an election. They keep bringing stuff back. We need a light rail system. We need to spend all kinds of money on, you know, doing a harbor or some big project of blah, 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 spend your money. And they'll repackage it. They keep redoing it, and they keep more threats here, more problems there. We're all going to die. If you don't do it, we're all going to die. We're all going to die if you don't do it. You know, so I'm going, all right, so how many times they got to do this? It's twice already. You know what? And they're saying, look, man, you know, they're going to go to court. You're going to have the British and Dutch governments are going to go to The Hague, and they're going to the world court saying, you know, they got it, and then what? So they have in here, there's something I thought was interesting that they commented here. It said on Daily Bell, yes, reluctantly, the Dutch and British must sue. If the verdict is not appropriately, okay, does not suit them, if it's not punitive enough, and Iceland's hardy fisherman stock does not learn its lesson, and in this illustrative fashion for everybody, then perhaps the Pentagon's legendary doomsday weather weapon, HAARP, shall be brought to bear. Iceland to be wiped, sadly, from the map by fire and ice. Over time, surely its name shall be expunged from the history books. All mention of its miserable bank shall be redacted as well. What Iceland? This is, I'm really afraid that this is exactly the mentality that these guys have. Little old 300 and something thousand people Iceland, which is the size of, heck, you know, some small community here in the United States, the entire freaking country. They are, you know, what's their wealth come from? The ocean, I imagine. You know, they have the capacity to make their own geothermal energy. They are very green in a sense. And here you had, they probably got advantage of all this money coming in using these banks, you know, and then what happens? Hey, you know, take the house, man. I'm done. I can't afford it. Oh, no. All of this, and it's not just them. It's depositors from all over the world that went there. They met the conditions. You know, if this happens, you know, we have this insurance fund. Ran out of money. Did, you know, hey, what does it say here? It says this is done. Have a nice day. Who bailed them out? The British government. Then they send them the bill. And they're going, how the heck did we, what? So them saying we're not taking on this debt for generations of Icelandic youth to be enslaved by this, and their system allowed them to say, you know, no, it's no. Can't have that. Sets a bad precedent. Who do you think really runs this country? Well, we're going to find out. So I'm interested. Now, in the last couple of years, Iceland had been trying to attract businesses to go there by having all kinds of, you know, business-friendly taxing things and who can buy property and own and what kind of corporation and licensing and regular blah, 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 which could make them, heck, you know, they're Iceland. But you go, I can make money there. I want to go there. So that's where Sovereign Man comes in. We have Simon Black. He's traveling around the world, and he's looking for places that can be considered stable that we can all move to. Well, Chile is on top of his list right now. But, you know, I mean, if you've been around long enough, you know, these things change on a dime, man. Just boom. All of a sudden, they're a totalitarian regime like they used to be. You know, what is it that makes the difference? I'll tell you what it is. It's the people. It's the culture. I'm wondering how it went from 90 to 60% there. And I think a lot of people just didn't vote. They go, look, man, you know, we already did this once. You know, they probably wouldn't even care what the vote was. So where we're going is going to depend a great deal on just our personal relationships. And that brings me to, I want to share this one story. I don't think I've ever even told this story before. In 1988, when I first became aware of what was going on, and you read different laws and my father's company and so on, it's a long story, but I just, wow, this is not what they told us in junior high. I knew that, you know, there was, I could get the message out, something that was, you know, be the town crier. Look, man, this is coming. They pass this law that does, and they're going to take, and the government's a gang with a flag, and didn't you know, and oh my goodness, and they're doing this and planning that and future and trade and all. I'm, wow, here we go. Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act of 88, mapped it out. New World Order, it goes. Never even heard the word before, understood exactly what was coming. There was a friend of mine, his name is Wayne Letcher. He had absolutely no interest in politics. You know, he's just like, hey, you know, my friend, you know, wants to do this thing, whatever. You got pizza and beer and cool, and we'll just, you know, we'll hang. Wayne was a good friend for a long time still. He came to my birthday party a couple weeks ago. It was great to see him. And I'm sure he probably thinks that it's like an insult or something. I said, yeah, I've known Wayne since back. Yeah, he didn't care. It's just, he just wants to help, you know, guys, you know, beer. You know, we'll go in the, with my friend. That's not the point that I'm trying to make. I want to bring this up so that you guys understand the importance of friends. Wayne is a good friend. My kids call him Uncle Wayne. They've known him all their lives. We were friends before we even got married, Donna and I. So that makes it over 26, 27, 28 years. There are people that don't care. Family members don't care about politics. Now, he's become more and more interested, and, you know, and he kind of, you know, has his own opinion about different things. You know, he's a, you know, professional. He knows what's going on. He's out. He drives a truck. You know, he's a truck driver around the country. You know, he gets to see how the impact of, and it certainly affects his business. But the thing is that to have friends and people that you know that are willing to help you do whatever it is, accumulate food, dig your root cellar, you know, have improvements on, doing whatever that you think would be in preparation for, growing, plowing, whatever. Just like all good friends, they do these things not because of the reasons why you're doing it, but because you're doing it. If it wasn't for friends like Wayne, there would not have been the progression that we were able to challenge the man. He helped me make a lot of our first signs, a lot of the campaigns, so on. And it wasn't for some noble cause or anything. Let me tell you what his noble cause was. I was his friend. These are the kinds of relationships I want to emphasize as being important. Not everyone's got to agree with us. Not everyone's got to know everything. Not everyone's got to be, you know, on mission. Not everyone's got to be, you know, and that's one thing is we go around looking for places to stay. If we go to, you know, not everybody's got to be all bunkered in. But are they decent people? Do they value friendships? Do they value the concept of keeping their word? Returning, you know, stuff they borrow in as good or better condition, or compensating you when it's not. You know, they're not doing this teenager thing. They left your 9/16 wrench in the yard to rust and get run over by the mower. I mean, you know, these, what kind of friends are they? Are they an add to your life? Or are they a distraction? Do you have family members that, you know, you see as a resource, or are they a liability? What obligation do you have to people that, you know, constantly cost you distraction and money and whatever, and then the others that don't? Is it all based solely on whether they agree with you or not? No. People are individuals. They do your relationships. I know a lot of good, great activist libertarians, their spouses, hey, man, I'll help you do whatever, you know, and go and whatever, but don't expect me to get involved in it. Same thing may be for religion and so on. I want us to start, you know, think, I wanted to share that with you because there are friends, good people, that have no interest whatsoever in a lot of stuff we find so important. But without them, we wouldn't have been able to do what we're doing. We'll be back in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. With me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day here on LRN.FM Network. And loving on all y'all, because, sharing information, what we know, we're just trying to give you perspective, because I love you. You know, and you know, some of you, you know, probably don't hate me either. Well, what we're going to do is just go through some of the headlines that we have here, and I want to just share some of the goodies because I mean, dang, you know, this is what we have up. Now we go ahead and take a look at silver at $40.29, over 40. I mean, you think it's going to get below 20 again? 10? Probably not. So, you know, fortunately, if you were, you know, paying attention and believing Austrian economic kind of, you know, Ron Paul types that were just going, you know, this is like math, you're constantly buying silver and gold. Well, what are you doing now? You going to sell it? You know, cash in? And then, you know, maybe it'll go down, you buy it again. I don't know, man. I'm not feeling comfortable about, you know, getting rid of nothing. I think I'll just hold on to. Yeah, 1463, you know, we're near up towards the top on gold, too. So, you know, there we go on that. Okay, here's some goodie. Biometric permanent account number, PAN cards, permanent account number, PAN. India introduces PAN cards. The government has decided to issue biometric PAN cards to taxpayers across the country. India is a lot of people. They're almost a billion. I mean, aren't they like 700-800 million people or something? That's wow. To weed out the problem of duplicate and fake ones, the decision was taken recently by the finance ministry, and it comes in the wake of a computer and auditor general report that asked the income tax department to issue that a single taxpayer is not issued multiple cards. The proposed new biometric permanent account number cards would bear the IT assessee's fingerprints, two from each hand. And the face. There could be an option to existing PAN cards holders to opt for the biometric cards, but it may not be mandatory. The senior official said, yeah, it will be. Here we go. They have, it's like a Social Security card, I guess, you know, except where a Social Security card says, you shall not be used for identification. Well, they, you know, kind of, yeah, it is. And now it's going to be biometric. Okay, here we go. The World Bank and IMF are meeting in Washington. Why don't we care anymore? Cherry blossoms and anti-globalization marches for many years. These were inevitable rites of spring in Washington. But today, while the cherry trees are still blooming, the street demonstrations have wilted. The springtime protests were prompted by the semi-annual meetings of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, regularly held in early April. The marchers, many traveling to Washington from faraway places, came to voice their fury against free markets, world poverty, environmental decay, or U.S. foreign policy. They often had specific demands. Stop imposing unpopular economic reforms. Like fiscal austerity and that kind of stuff, on poorer countries in exchange for IMF and World Bank funding. Cancel the debts poor countries owe to international banks. Stop free trade agreements. Protect the environment and boost aid to Africa. In general, stop pushing policies that, according to the protesters, promoted savage capitalism and heartless globalization. Now, though a few vigils and rallies will probably pop up surrounding next week's meetings, they will be nothing like the riotous ones that they had before with tear gas, blah, 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 blah. Why? You know, this is an opinion in the Washington Post. You know, where did the protesters all go? What, is everything, we all healed now? No, it was always about, you know, forgiving debt of these guys and giving more money over here to these guys, and you guys need to use your power to do good for people. Well, they're the ones that screwed it up. You know, and now we're going to what? You know, we're going to go to a world, though? You know, and then that's what the protesters were funded and supported and behind the scenes. That's why they were there, was to get us to this point. So I'm like, okay, all right. That's where the protesters went because they already got. It's like, where are the anti-war protesters? You know, I don't know. Pentagon's second thoughts on Iraq withdrawal. 8 months shy of its deadline for pulling the last American soldier from Iraq and closing the door on an 8-year war, the Pentagon is having second thoughts. Reluctant to say it publicly, officials fear a final pullout in December could create a security vacuum, the Associated Press. Offering an opportunity for power grabs by antagonists in an unresolved and simmering Arab-Kurd dispute, a weakened but still active al-Qaeda, or even an adventurous neighbor such as
Iran.
They're never going to stop. These aren't meant to be won. These wars are meant to just continue being fought. And when you have a failure, epic fail, of government at every level doing anything, they have to keep reinventing the need for their existence. I will give you an example. Here we have the private space race is just eclipsing, you know, get out of the way. We're going to Mars. So what happens? You know, I mean, you can't be, you know, left alone. You know, bold U.S. Russia joint nuclear spaceship proposed. Here we go. A nuclear-powered spaceship may propel the first manned mission to Mars. I don't think they're going to beat Musk, you know, the guy from PayPal. You probably edge him out. Anatoly Perminov, the director of Roscosmos, the Russian counterpart of NASA, told the Russian news agency that RIA that a joint Russian-U.S. nuclear spacecraft project will be on the table during April 15th meetings with the U.S. Space Agency. Besides the U.S., other countries that have nuclear expertise will be included in the proposal. Perminov added those countries will include China, Japan, Germany, and France. Now, the one thing they've been trying to avoid is putting nuclear reactors in space, you know, because like bombs and stuff. And if that's a good propulsion, yeah, whatever, you know, but do I want the government doing this? I'm just not feeling warm and fuzzy. Do private industry, you know, are they thinking they have the expertise? Are they going to be allowed to put a reactor in space? Can we have a Starship Enterprise, you know, sponsored by Coca-Cola? I mean, you know, are we going to be at what? Elon Musk isn't waiting anymore. He's going, you know, Falcon Heavy, that's what this is all about, is going to Mars. You know, blah, 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 Mars. All these launches for next few years, we sold out all our launches. Yeah, that's all very interesting. Going to help me pay for Mars. We can put up Bigelow Aerospace has two private space stations in orbit right now. Genesis 1, Genesis 2 for years. Nobody ever knows about this stuff. They're going to be putting up, they had such good results from the first two, they didn't even do the third test one. They're building full mock-ups. They're going to put hotels in space. In fact, the guy that's doing it, Bigelow Aerospace, is the guy that owns Budget Suites out of Vegas. He's going, hey, man, we're going to have a hotel. We're going to LaGrange 1, man. We're going to have us trips to the moon. And they have everything ready to do it. Here we go. We're going to space, and government's not invited. Well, they're going to invite themselves. There'll be all kinds of policing. The universe is their oyster kind of thing. Going, gone, galt. Oh, by the way, years ago, I got that website. Going, gone, galt.com, org, net, whatever. Because I know where this is going to go, man. And then we'll use it for something someday. I have a bunch like that. You know, I got plans. So here we have the U.S. and Russia. We're gonna be buds in space. All right. How'd that International Space Station thing work out? You know, how many gazillions of dollars for what? Why, what? And for a fraction of that, they're going to be putting hotels where we can go. And who's going to say we can't? Bad guys. You know, I'm just so sick of this stuff. There's so much coming, and nobody even knows. Now, here's a go. A former advisor to China's central bank, now this is from Zero Hedge, said on Monday that China should have retreated from the U.S. government bond market and instead allowed the yuan to appreciate more freely, warning that U.S. sovereign debt was akin to a giant Ponzi scheme. According to a Newswire report that cited an editorial comment on Axiom Media Group's website, Zhu Zhongding, a former member of the People's Bank of China Monetary Policy Committee, kind of their Fed thing, and now a member of the state-run policy group, said allowing appreciation of the yuan against the U.S. dollar under a free-floating currency regime would have reduced China's need to acquire U.S. treasuries. He likened the U.S. treasury market to a giant Ponzi scheme. You think they don't know? They know. The dollar's done. Why do you think all the prices and commodities are starting to shoot up? It's happening now. Get your silver dimes. You know, they're worth $3 now. $3. I got them when they're like $1.30 or something, just like last year. Here it comes. Are you ready? Better start getting ready. Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.